Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Network, celebrating our third year on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. Thank you for helping us become a number one rated live show with over 1 million global listeners. Our team is on a mission to help you discover your authentic best self and bring it to the world. And now, here's our show.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Best Ever You Show. I'm your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, and I'm here in Portland, Maine. And I thank you so much for listening. I know I have to update the intro to the show and the exit stuff and all the stuff. I just have not gotten around to that in the new year, and Christmas was crazy. So much fun here, a lot going on with my kids. So I promised to do that. But we're actually on our fourth year on Blog Talk Radio and at about 2.5 million downloads and listeners. So that's way out of date. And I can't thank you enough for your Twitter following, retweets, sharing on Google+, LinkedIn. I don't even know where the show goes with all the different social media sites there are now. My kids tell me people Snapchat it and all this stuff. So I can't thank you enough for all you do to help us, because this really is a grassroots effort. When I started this show and started Best Ever You, I started, you know, just talking on the radio. I felt like I was talking to myself, really. And I grabbed a neighbor up the street, and we started this thing, besteveryou.com website. And it just really has grown so in such a cool way, with no funding from anybody, no investors, no anything. It's just grown surely by you guys. So thank you so much. And it's moments like these that make me just smile when we get these cool guests that come on. And I can say cool because he's from the 80s. And so all you guys that are listening now, don't think the word cool is cool. Too bad. We're going to say it a lot, and awesome and all those things, because Steve Lynch is here. And he's a founding member of the group Autograph. And I don't know, I've been watching their YouTube video and all this stuff and showing my kids Turn Up the Radio, but it's that song, yeah, Turn Up the Radio. And they sold over 5 million records worldwide, including the platinum-selling album Sign In, Please. And they had a hit single, Turn Up the Radio, which I am not going to sing for you. Maybe we can get him to sing or do something. But, yeah, I can hear him laughing. Yeah, guitar player singing. Yeah, you're good at everything, I can tell. A lot better than I am. But that song reached number 29 on the Billboard Hot 100. And, oh, gosh, I'm just going to be quiet and let you talk. How are you? Thank you so much for being on my show.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. I'm really glad to be here. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's cool. The power of Facebook. You know, this thing came in on my Facebook page to like the Autograph fan page. And I'm like, yeah, I know that band. That's so cool. And we got to talking, and I was like, any chance you might want to be maybe like on my radio show? And he said yes, and it freaked me out. I'm like, oh, no, now what do I do? Like, what do I ask him? In over
now
my
you
head.
Now have to do your research. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. That's weird when you have to Google people and you don't know, you know, what about them's right or wrong. You know, you feel like you're like stalking somebody, and I'm like, no, I'm cool. But how awesome. I have a question right off the bat, though. Like, what does that mean to be a two-handed guitarist? That is so cool. The one thing that just strikes me right off the bat, you are so incredible at playing the guitar. It's jaw-dropping how cool it is.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. What it was when I was going to the Guitar Institute back in 1978, that was down in Hollywood. I'm from Seattle, but I moved down to L.A. to go to the school down there. It was the first guitar school of its kind. And I went to that, and there was one of the first people that did a clinic there was this guy, Emmett Chapman, that had invented this instrument called the stick, which you play with both hands on a fingerboard, extended fingerboard. It's very wide. So there's one set of strings that you play with your left hand and another set of strings that you play with your right hand. And I was just blown away with what he was doing on that. And he mentioned at the early part of the clinic that he got so far with that technique on his own, like on a guitar, that, you know, I asked him after the clinic, I said, what did you mean on guitar? And he says, well, let me show you. And I gave him my guitar, and he played a couple of scales with both hands. And I just went, that is just so cool. And so luckily it was at the early part of the year when I was going there. And so I wrote down everything that I was learning there. I wrote down two-handed, like pentatonic scales, all the arpeggios, triads, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the chord inversions and everything. And so I basically had a book at the end of that by the time I graduated. And they asked me, actually, Howard Roberts, the guy that started the school, he saw me playing the technique and asked if I would want to publish the book. And I said, yes, of course. And so we got that out early part of 1979. And it was a big seller. A lot of people were into that. And so it worked out really well. So I was glad to get on that.
Did you always know, like, as a little kid, that that's what you could do?
That technique, you mean, or just playing guitar in general?
And musically inclined as a little kid. I mean, were you the kid in kindergarten who was, like, singing and drumming on everything? And you know what I mean?
What really got me into it was in 1964, I was only 9 years old, my older sister got the Meet the Beatles album. And she had all of her friends over, and her friends were all really cute. And so they played, they had a little party, and they played the whole record. And I watched the way that they reacted, and I thought, that's what I want to do right there. Because all of her friends were going crazy, and I thought, that's what I want to do.
Have all the girls go crazy? Or
Yeah.
That's exactly.
That's what inspired me, actually.
The way to it.
But then I got into the music end of it. You know, I really, really got into it when Hendrix came out. And that's when I thought, loved Hendrix so much. And Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page and all those players, that was my bowl of Cheerios every day. I was listening to those guys. And so I started copying their licks and everything. And I got really serious in 1970 when I was 15 years old. And I was going over to my friend's house practicing all day instead of going to school. And my dad found out that in the eighth grade I only went to 51 days of school. And he said, where have you been? And I said, well, I've been over at Stephens. We've been jamming all day. And he goes, well, if you're going to play guitar, you can't live here. You know, that's what you're going to do if you're not going to go to school. And I said, well, can I borrow the tent? And he said, we haven't used that tent in years. You can have it. And so what I did was I took the tent and I moved it to my friend's place and cut out a bunch of sticker bushes and set up the tent. And I had an extension cord running out from his place, and I had a little heater in there, my little amplifier, and a light and everything. And I was good to go. I stayed there the whole winter, and it was a great experience. I mean, I just sat there and was able to play. So it was really cool.
Yeah. I saw in your Facebook pictures, you know, I told you I was going to go through them and pick pictures for the show and everything. I saw a thing that said something to the effect of, and you can fill in here, but, you know, dear Mr. and Mrs. Lynch, we need to talk to you about your son and all this stuff. And he's not going to be in school here anymore and all this stuff. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that happens to a lot more kids than people want to talk about. Because school isn't for some people, and some people's brains are wired differently, and you might not fit in and all those things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I really felt like I didn't fit in. What I was doing was I was actually reading a lot on my own anyway, and I had different subjects that I was interested in, some spiritual books and, you know, Chariots of the Gods by Eric Von Doniger, and just people were turning me on to a lot of books, too, because, you know, I was hanging out with older people that weren't in school anymore and stuff, and they saw that I was reading a lot. As well as playing guitar, so they started to just give me books, and I would read them, and I just kind of became addicted to reading books, and I think I learned a lot more actually from being out of school than being in school, and the type of material that I was learning was much, much more interesting to me. So I'm kind of glad that worked out that way. I just didn't feel like I really fit in. It wasn't only just what the school was teaching itself; it was just with the other students. I didn't feel like I really fit in with them. And so I have no qualms about anybody doing homeschooling or, you know, learning off of the internet nowadays. I think it's a great way to do it, actually. So
well,
I'm all for it.
Have special schools, too, where you can go if you're super musically inclined or mathematically inclined. Or sometimes they take what you're truly interested in and they just completely focus, and that's kind of cool, too. Because I know one of my older sons, just the last 2 years of high school, you know, he went and did everything he was going, you know, supposed to do to a certain extent, but he was just so into meteorology, and he's like, oh, these classes, they just don't fit what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be a weather chaser, you know, a storm chaser, and do all these cool things with the weather and everything, and I'm sitting here learning about Shakespeare, and I don't want to be, you know, and whatever, you know, I'm not saying
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
And
I think that's a really good point. I think that they should focus a lot more on what students are interested in at a young age and maybe start, you know, pushing them a little bit more in that direction, like finding something that they're really interested in. And I think that would be a really good way to catapult them into the future.
So when did you actually, what age did you actually start playing the guitar?
In 1967, I started playing guitar, but there was already another guitar player on the block, so that's when you know, he asked me to get a bass, so I saved up the money from my paper route and got a bass. But I wanted to play guitar. I really wanted to. And so, you know, I had a guitar too. So when Hendrix died, that's when I just went, you know what, that's what I really want to do. Is he died September 18th, 1970. And so that day was kind of it. I just changed everything. I traded in my bass and I got a Stratocaster, and that was it. I was addicted from that point on.
How
so
do you go from there?
I would say that that's, you know, that's really when I took it serious, was when I was 15. And that's when I really just started practicing, you know, daily, several hours a day.
That's so young. It's so cool. You just knew. How do you go from there? Take us to autograph. So 15-year-old kid with our autograph.
I started playing professionally when I was 18, around the Seattle area up here, and played at clubs, but I had to go out and wait in our van on the breaks because I wasn't 21. I wasn't old enough to be in there. And so, you know, I did that for a few years, played in, oh, God, five different bands until I went down to L.A. to go to the Guitar Institute. And after I graduated from there, I was going to come back up here, but I started to get all this work studio jobs. I played with just numerous people on so many different tracks, even Donna Summers, people like that. And I kept on getting studio work, so I thought, well, I'm going to stay here, you know, since I'm getting all this work. And I started to actually develop a name for myself in L.A., which is, you know, pretty hard to do. So I thought, well, I'm just going to stick it out, and I'm going to see what happens here. And then with Autograph, it was, you know, a few of the members, we knew each other from, you know, doing different shows together, even though we were in different bands, you know, and you know, just going to check out our shows and stuff around the whole LA scene at that time. And, you know, we started talking to, you know, Steve Plunkett, the original lead singer, and Randy. And I was actually in a later version of Wolfgang just for a couple of gigs. And that was their band that they had before Autograph. And then Steve Plunkett, the singer, and I put together a group called Looker. And we did a few shows with them, and then we kind of drifted apart because we had other gigs going on. At the time that Autograph actually formed, it was kind of almost like a mistake in the way that what happened was I was playing, and the keyboard player, Steve Isham, we were playing on Dreamland Records with a girl named Holly Penfield. Kenny Richards was playing in a group called The Coup on A&M Records. Steve Plunkett was playing in a group called, oh God, I can't remember the name of them, but they were on Columbia Records. And then Randy Ran was playing in a, with Lita Ford, actually. And so we were we would go to this rehearsal place. It was called Victor Rehearsal Studios out in North Hollywood. And we would get together for just rehearsals, just to kind of kick it around and throw some song ideas together and everything. But we didn't take it very seriously. It was just kind of a side project that all of us were doing, because we were all done recording and doing most of the touring with the other bands that we were already committed to. But this just turned out to kind of be like a hobby. But then Andy Johns, the producer, Glenn Johns, Andy Johns, his brother, they had worked with Led Zeppelin and Stones and everybody. And they were from England, so they had a lot of experience. He came down, he was a friend of ours, and listened to our material that we were writing, and he said, God, I really like this stuff. And so the next thing you know is he said, hey, I've got time at Gower Studios in Hollywood if you guys want to come down and cut a free demo. And so we thought, hey, why not? Go down and cut a 5-song demo on the weekend. And we recorded all the parts one day on Saturday, and then we went in the next day and mixed it down and mastered it. And then our drummer was actually jogging every morning with David Lee Roth. He'd meet him on Sunset Boulevard every morning at 8:30, and they'd go jogging. And David asked him what he was doing, and he said, well, I'm playing with this group called The Coup on A&M Records, and I'm also playing with these other guys. We haven't got a name or anything, but we just cut a demo. You want to hear it? And so David said, yeah. And after they got done jogging, they went up to his place, and Kenny played it for him. And he said, God, I really, really like this stuff a lot. And he asked us if we'd be interested in going on the 1984 tour with him, which actually started on my birthday back in 1984, January 18th. So Kenny came to the rehearsal the next weekend, and he laid this on us and said, well, I think we can go out for a few months, because all of us were pretty much done doing, you know, all of our commitments with the other groups that we were with. And so we thought, yeah, let's go out for a few months. We'll think of a name and we'll just go do it. It'll be a great time. So we did, and we actually, you know, rented a Winnebago and had a few rehearsals and passed the hat around to collect money for gas to get from Los Angeles to Jacksonville, Florida, right straight across.
What were
the
reject names
I-10.
For the band? What did you guys come up with that the band isn't named?
Well, what we did was, while we were in the Winnebago driving there, we still didn't have a name, and so each one of us wrote down 5 names on a piece of paper, and then we passed those 5 pieces of paper with the 5 names on around, and people crossed out which ones they didn't like. And the only 2 that were left were Red Cross and Autograph, and we decided to go with Autograph temporarily because, you know, it's hard to just come up with a name just on the spot like that. So we thought, you know, we'll use this, and then we'll think of something different later on. But it kind of stuck because, you know, just out of, you know, the months that we ended up playing with them, I think we were out with them for 4 or 5 months, and then we went back to L.A. because we got signed to RCA Records. You know, we had to quit our other groups. But that's what happened. Aww. Was we were out playing, and here we are. We're playing in front of 18,000, 20,000 people every night, and we're getting this following going, and we're going over really well, opening up for Van Halen. So it kind of ended up being that, you know, we had Warner Brothers, A&M, Epic Records, Geffen. We had you know, RCA and everybody, you know, throwing deals at us. And we're going, well, we're in other bands, you know. But we decided, you know what, this is something that we created, and it's our own thing. And let's go ahead and give notice to the other bands and give them a chance just so that they can replace us. And let's go ahead and do this, because RCA wanted to sign us to a 3-album deal. And they offered for us to keep 100% of the publishing. And RCA had never done that with a band ever before, not even with Elvis. so we thought, you know, let's go ahead and take it. And we did, and we went back, and, you know, we finished writing up enough for the album, and we went into the studio and started cutting songs. And while we were at rehearsal one time, this was odd, but turn up the radio wasn't even written as of yet. And we were going into the studio in a couple days and to start the record. At the record plant down in Los Angeles, and I was up on stage just jamming this, you know, this riff, the riff that starts out with Turn Up the Radio, and everybody kind of said, what is that? You know, and I said, I don't know, I'm just playing it. And I said, come on, guys, get up here, and we'll try to make something out of it. And so we did, and we were just goofing around, and next thing you know, we kind of had a whole song together. And then we started, you know, coming up with lyrics like, you know, Turn Up the Tape Machine and everything, and just all kinds of stuff like that. And then it came to Turn Up the Radio. And the funny thing is RCA heard the song. You know, we invited them down to listen to it. They said, no, that song's not strong enough to be on the album. We want the first single to be Send Her to Me. And so when we went into the studio, we recorded it anyway, because we thought, you know, this is Turn Up the Radio. Every radio station is going to love this. You know, we knew it. We were right. And then, of course, when it was released and it became a hit, then RCA said it was their idea. And we just went, yeah, right, guys. Because, you know, record companies will try to take credit for it, even though credit is not due to them, of course.
Of course, Now,
so that's
in
how,
all that.
That's how it happened in a nutshell, basically.
Awesome.
That's how it happened.
In all that, is that, like, such a blast? Is it a ton of work? Does it seem like it's not really happening, but it is? I mean, how does that go? I mean, it sounds like a lot of dedication, focus, you know, all the things that you have to have with a slight little bit of luck, being in the right place, thinking of the right things, but mostly just such cool raw talent.
It's I think what a lot of people don't realize is when you are in, you know, the mainstream and you're, it's now your way of living. It's, you know, it's your income and everything, and it's your life.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that it's extremely time consuming, and you have to put a lot of work into it, into the writing, into the rehearsal, into the recording, the production of everything, putting together, you know, the live show and then being out on tour and still writing and everything. I think that and doing all the interviews, the photo shoots and everything, it gets so to the point where it's completely overwhelming, and you're being torn every which way imaginable. You know, by people that need this, people that need that, and our managers and everything are saying, "Well, you got to be here at this time, da da da," and you know, so it's very hard to manage everything, in which we're managing ourselves now. I'm actually the tour manager, and so we go out, you know, and I have to have all the shows set up. I have to make sure all the equipment's there and everything, and the hotels are set, and boom, 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 all of it has to be all set up, you know, all the ducks in a row before we get there. And so that's a lot of work, you know, just setting that up. And then we're doing our own merchandising, you know, and mailing all that out. So we're doing everything ourselves. The only thing we have is a booking agent who gets us the gigs, and that's it. We do everything else ourselves. So it's a lot of work. It is, but we enjoy doing it that way. That way we retain pretty much complete control over everything that goes on.
Yeah. I think it's really cool how, accessible you are. And I know that's the comment like my friends have made, like, wow, is that really them? Is he really coming on the show? I'm like, yeah. And he didn't make it a complete pain in the ass to get here either. It was completely easy. And it was so refreshing, because sometimes you try and book a guest and there's, you know, 10 people in the way, and you can say this and can't say that and all this stuff. And it was lovely to just be you and have some control over what we're doing. It's cool. Does it really get to the point when you're doing things like that you really don't, you know, you hear like, I don't even know what city I'm in or where I am, or does it get like that?
Yeah, it does, but that was more so back in the 80s. But because of the fact that we're now, booking flights and doing all that stuff on our own, we pretty much know, you know, where we're always going, because we're in control of it. So we pretty much have to know. But
yeah, exactly.
When we were on tour back in the
80s, I don't know where we are.
Was,
what flight are we on?
Yeah, it was just
Portland, Maine.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in the 80s, all we did was just get on the tour bus after the show and just go on to the next gig. We didn't care where we were going. You know, it's just like the bus was going to take us there. And so it was like living in a little magical land where everything was taken care of for you. Those days are over. We're doing
it. Well, I'm not going to do the whole interview in the past either, but I do, I think that, you know, I told everybody you were coming on here, and I got a lot of hair questions. I got to be honest with you. There were a lot of, like, what was up with the hair? You know, I'm sure you've been asked that a kajillion times, but that's some serious hair. I mean, I checked out the video. My sons checked out the video. They're like, their hair is, like, big, and that's
No, that was my hair. Yeah, that was my hair. You know, it was all of our hair, you know, but it just became what was popular back in the 80s. And I'm more of a 70s guy. So up until we actually started touring, I had my hair like more like in like a shag type cut. It's more like it looked like I was, you know, a younger Keith Richards or Ron Wood or something like that. It was that kind of English shag type look that I had sported for some years. And so you know, that thing. They said, no, you got to grow your hair out. It's got to look like this. And I went, oh, okay. You know, but then as soon as that was over, then I cut it down and tamed it down a little bit. You know?
Yeah, that was why I'm a trained news anchor. And my hair, I love my hair way longer and bleach blonde, you know, whatever you can do to my hair, I really don't care except to cut it.
Right.
And like, oh my God, they were like, you have to have your hair above your shoulders and it's got to be, and I'm like, oh, leave my hair alone, you're freaking me out. And at one point I just remember them dyeing my hair its original color. I'm like, oh, hell no, we are not going there. And it was just so funny, but I get the whole hair thing completely.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where, it becomes a fad. I'm sure with your work, it's a different kind of thing. But back then, nobody could really tell us how to wear our hair. It was just more like, you know, this is the suggestion we're going to make, you know. And so they kind of pressure you into it because they want you to look like everybody else, yeah.
Well, of course, yeah. That's the same thing with the news anchor thing. But so now you have the band. You reformed the New Autograph group in 2014. Now you're on another national tour. Who's in the band, and what do they do, and who's original, and who's new, and who is everybody? I know I just came across Simon, who's awesome. He is so cool. I met him on Twitter and Facebook now, too. But can you go through everybody that's in the band?
Yeah, well, Randy and I, the bass player and myself, are the original members. And then there's Simon Daniels. He fit in really well, really well. He's a great showman. You know, he plays rhythm guitar really good, and his voice is superb. And he came in and he gave, you know, even the old songs new life, you know, let alone the new songs that we're writing now and recording. So, and then Mark, and he's originally from Brazil, and so he brings a different perspective in as well, which I like. You know, I like that, more of an international perspective. And Mark Wieland, he's the drummer. He's actually from Switzerland, and so he brings in another perspective as well. And great drummer. He fit right in. He's just a good, solid, just steady drummer. And you know, the thing that makes us so tight knit is that we all get along very well. We agree on one of the main things. I said I want us to be really accessible to the fans, where we go out and we talk to them after each show, and we just make ourselves accessible on the social media and everything, so that people, you know, they feel like they're our friends, which they are. And they all agreed with that, and things just roll really smooth because everybody has their own personal agendas that they have to take care of for the band to make it work. And so we work together on that, and we do very well with it.
Yeah, I like that approach too, because people want to support you in any way that they can in their own way and how they know how. So, like, for example, I know how to do my part in supporting you with the show. Another person might do their part in supporting you by wearing your T-shirt or passing out your CDs to their friends at a, you know, even at like at a book club. You know, you have no idea what people do to support you. So I love the fact that accessibility is so key these days. You know that, you know, selling over 5 million records, you definitely know that anyway.
Absolutely.
But the world has changed. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it has. And that was one of the things I had talked to Simon about, you know, about the first single. Was I came up with the lyric content for the song, You Are Us, We Are You, because, you know, I was basically writing it for the fans. And then we got together on the rest of the lyrics, and we got together on the music part and everything. We made it kind of happen. But that song is dedicated, you know, to the fans. You know, it's just like, hey, there's no difference. We're out here. We're playing for you. We're partying with you, you know, and you are us, we are you. That's all there is to it. And that's why I wanted to get that first song out there like that. And that's just showing our appreciation to the fans and friends.
Yeah. How did you guys all meet?
Well, it was basically Larry Moran, who puts on the Monsters of Rock cruise from the Caribbean, and now we're doing the one in L.A. this year, actually, that leaves from L.A. anyway and goes down to Mexico. He's the one that puts those on, and he recommended Simon to us, who used to be in jailhouse, and then after that he was in a group called The Flood. But you know, we checked out a couple of his things on YouTube, and we went, God, this guy's got a great look. He's got a really good persona on stage, and I think he would work very well. And so we got together for our first rehearsal, and it just worked out really good. He did his homework and learned the songs very, very well, I might add. And it just seemed to just gel really quickly. And we had our original drummer, too, at the time, but he had some health issues, and so we thought it best, you know, to try it with somebody else, because he wouldn't have been able to really tour very many shows at all, and we wanted to get out and play quite a bit. So that's when Simon recommended Mark, and he came into the picture. But, you know, everything worked out very well.
Now, this time around, like, for example, do you have kids, a wife? You know, do you guys all have families? How does that work now? A little bit older?
Well, let's see.
How old is everybody?
None of us are actually... None of us are actually married. I was married when I was, you know, when Autograph was first taking off. And then it just got so busy, and my ex-wife, she wanted to have kids. And I said, look, I'm going to be on the road for the next probably 7 years. I don't think it'd be fair to the kids if I'm going to be gone. And I was gone. I was gone for another 7 years after that point.
Yes.
And we split up, but we're still right. Really good friends. She's married. She lives in Nashville. And she has two grown boys, one's in college and one's in high school, and we're still great friends. We talk all the time and everything. In fact, I was giving her oldest son tutorial lessons over the phone and stuff for a while there. So,
awesome.
Yeah. And so
yeah.
It all worked out very well.
That's so smart of
you.
Because, yeah, kids, you got to be present, and it's, yeah, or they
yes.
get pissed later on and blame me for everything. It's kind of
right. And I wanted to be there as well. If I was going to have kids, I wanted to be there to see them. And no, I was gone after I got done with Autograph, which we split up in 1989. And I know you wanted to ask me about that. It was, we basically split up, you know, in 89, because it was basically the end of the 80s. That's what I tell people. It was the end of the 80s. And you know, the Seattle thing was happening. With the whole grunge thing, it was Nirvana, Soundgarden, you know, Pearl Jam, just all these different groups that were coming out of Seattle, like Alice in Chains too, and which I really do like Alice in Chains a lot. But you know, it was the music scene was definitely changing, and the 80s were over at that point. Even though a lot of people didn't want to see it end, the last band that kind of was
still don't, really.
The latter part of the 80s was Guns N' Roses. That kind of snuck in underneath the radar, and they made it, but they were a little bit different. They had a little bit more of a raw edge, and I think that's why they fit in right at the end of the 80s there. But we were working with Epic Records, and we were in rehearsal, you know, with the new songs and everything. We were recording new songs to demo out for Epic Records after our RCA deal was up. And I just kind of went, guys, I don't think I'm into this. I said one day at rehearsal, and I had been thinking about it a lot, and I kind of wanted to do more of my solo thing, because I knew the 80s were over, and we were kind of doing the same thing. We were going for that harder edge, too. We weren't using keyboards anymore, and we were writing heavier stuff, but I just didn't feel
that. That doesn't seem like you, though. That doesn't seem like you. Just in talking to you and everything? Were you... Is it?
Why, because I'm not using the word dude enough?
Yeah, I don't know. No, you just seem a little bit softer than that. I don't know. That just seems like a departure to me. I don't know. I don't know you well enough, but just in talking to you, you just don't seem rough like that. I don't know if that's the right word or whatever. And that's not a knock on you. I mean, that to me is a compliment.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. Actually, you know, my solo album, it's a big departure, because that's what I kind of wanted to go for, was more like what my solo album's about. It's just titled after my name, Steve Lynch, and it's called Network 23. And that album, that's more of the writing that I wanted to do. And I wrote, arranged, produced, and played most of the instruments on it, except for drums and some of the keyboards and the vocals, of course, and that was it. But it was kind of just a work of my own heart, you know. And you'll see people that do listen to it, they go, wow, that's really different from what Autograph is, you know, or was, you know. And I said, yeah, you know, it is different. But you know, I've always been into, you know, stuff like the Moody Blues. I love Pink Floyd. You know, that's the kind of stuff I'm into. I listen to bands even now, like Balagamingo, Conjure One, Delirium, Porcupine Tree, stuff like that that is not mainstream at all, even though it's very popular in Europe. Hardly any stations play any of that stuff here.
Right.
And that's the kind of stuff I like listening to. It's just different. It's very musically inclined, and it's not just the in-your-face rock and roll, which I still love the in-your-face rock and roll stuff. I mean, I love that too, but, you know, a lot of different flavors that I like to, you know,
I think we all do. It's
writing.
It's important to not want to turn off the radio. So, you know, we want to turn it up, not off. And, yeah, some of the stuff is like, oh, I got to turn that off now, you know. And I can't tell if I'm getting old or what it is. But I'm like, okay, I got to turn. But I like a lot of things that are just piano. I don't know. I'm an old piano player. That was like the one thing I could do. I just love pure piano. Whatever.
You know,
anyway.
It's funny that a lot of the bands I listen to don't have that much guitar in, because I think it's just a departure, you know, from listening to just guitar-oriented bands since the 60s, you know, through the 70s and into the 80s and the 90s and everything. And then, you know, I think in the 90s is when my listening, that's when it really started to change. I really started to listen to different stuff. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, oh my gosh, you're such a good, great guitar player. Do you, tell me about like teaching guitar. You know, once you're so great at something, I imagine everybody just must be, can you teach me? You've got to be a mentor to so many people. And you founded the Federal Way School of Music. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you must be. Can you talk a little bit about that, how it kind of changes over to teaching people and mentoring people and your music school? That's cool.
Well, you know, even when I graduated from the Guitar Institute in 1979, I was even teaching a little bit back then. So I kind of taught on and off. It wasn't something that I just started doing back in the 90s, you know, after the band was done. It was something that I had been doing on and off. In fact, when Autograph was done, I went out and did 325 clinics in 22 different countries. And that was, you know, promoting my books, because, you know, since my first book, I'd written two more, and I had done an instructional video. And so, and then I had, you know, a teaching site up, you know, I put that together later on. It's called lynchlicks.com, LynchLicks.com. And that's more for advanced players, though, but I like to teach people how to play. I mean, it gives me great gratification to know that somebody, you know, as learning to play the instrument, and you know, they're actually getting a lot of enjoyment out of it. It may keep them into doing something more recreational than something detrimental, you know, like getting into drugs or something. You know, that way you're giving them something to really be creative, and I think that's really a cool tool to share with somebody. And so I enjoyed. I've always enjoyed teaching, and you know, because of all the students that I've had, I've literally had thousands of students, you know, from, you know, LA to Florida when I lived down there, and then on back up to Seattle again. So, you know, I've gotten used to it, and I actually really enjoy doing it.
Are there people in, this might be a no, so you can just say no, it's not, but are there people in other bands that are, I don't know what, famous now, that have been taught by you? That's a really choppy question, sorry, but you know, are there people you go, yeah, I taught them and them and that?
Yeah, there was Rocky George. He was a student of mine. He was in Suicidal Tendencies. And then there's John Shank, who actually was in a lot of different TV stuff. He was you know, just doing all kinds of stuff down in LA. I was following him, and he was a student of mine. And now he's actually a famous producer, and he's doing really well with that. He has, you know, morphed over from being, you know, a guitarist, which he still is, but now he's a famous producer. And so, yeah, there's been some that have actually gone on. This guy, Kevin, that I taught, that's now, he's playing on all this television stuff, you know, down in L.A. And so, they've actually, I've had quite a few students that are actually out there making a living at it and doing it. So that makes me feel good. And another guy, this guy, Ben, he's now, one of the orchestra consultants for, I think it's the Philadelphia Philharmonic.
Yeah, I always say that wrong. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was trying to put Philadelphia and Philharmonic in the correct order.
I do it all the time. That's funny. What are some of your favorite movies? Do you watch movies? It's a totally random question.
Yes,
but once
I do.
You said that, I was thinking of the movie August Rush. I love that movie. But
I like that as well.
I love that movie.
Yeah, I do. I really enjoyed that movie. And, you know, some of the other ones that really kind of had a profound effect on me in my younger years, that was like 2001 A Space Odyssey. I liked The Clockwork Orange because I was a Stanley Kubrick fan, you know, and that goes as well as 2001 was also. I loved Apocalypse Now because I think that Francis Ford Coppola really kind of depicted what it was really like more so than any other war movie I'd ever seen. It was more truthful. The list goes on and on. I like the movie Powder. I like out there movies too. I like the movie Contact. With Jodie Foster.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. Because I like movies that really make you think. But actually, you know, some of my, a lot of what I do now is I watch a lot of documentaries because I'm a data freak. I love to learn stuff and I want to know it as much as I can about everything. So I have a library here of books and I have on my TV, I have, you know, saved probably 35 documentaries that I haven't even gotten to yet. And I'll watch one or two a night, you know? So,
that's funny. We're doing the same
thing.
I just love
documentaries.
I watch documentaries too. I do that all the time.
Yeah,
reading or documentaries.
Because,
strange, whatever. Just me.
Yeah, exactly. And
it is what it
you've
is.
Got these other people that are so prolific at teaching about a certain subject, and it really pulls you into it, you know, and makes you appreciate all the work that they put into it.
A lot of work, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you figured out why The Martian was nominated in the comedy category yet, though? Did you see that?
No, because I haven't seen the movie yet.
Okay. Nominated for comedy. It's like, why is that? And not that it was the best movie in the world or anything like that, but it was just so misplaced at the Golden Globes Award, whatever I just said.
Well, Rick
comedy.
Even said that when he went up to get the award. He said, comedy?
What?
He just kind of shook his head, you know, like,
yeah, whatever.
You know?
Like, comedy. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
I hear you. So I want to ask you more about the School of Music. Are you still involved with that? And what is that? And what's the website for it too? Sorry, we departed on movies, but we're coming back.
Okay. Yeah. That's we're doing full circle segues here. So we'll always come back
exactly.
to the subject we were talking about, but that happens.
Yeah.
It's FW, like as in Federal Way, FWSchoolOfMusic.com.
Okay.
So that's what that is. I actually started the school, and I kept it going for 10 years, but I'm going to be moving, so I sold my house and I let this friend of mine, Leon, take the school over. I'm still teaching there until September, and then I'll be moving to St. Petersburg, Florida.
Well, that's nice. That's a good thing, right? St. Petersburg,
Because I lived in Fort Lauderdale, and I loved it down there, but musically there wasn't a lot happening. Now that the band is established again, it doesn't really matter where I live. And my doctor has been telling me for a long time, because I have asthma and I, I'm allergic to the molds up here. And they said, this is the worst place you could be living. You know, like, you've got to move somewhere where you're not allergic to all these molds in the cold weather, as with people with asthma. And my asthma's not very bad, but I still have it. And it feels like I'm kind of sick all winter long. So I almost like look forward to going somewhere else for the winter. So, you know, they said, you know, you've really got to move, you know, it's just going to get worse year by year. So I thought
really
it's going to be a good year to do it.
The sunshine and the warm. And,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Somebody's got to do it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
we're sitting
is something,
on.
You know, good.
No,
okay.
Here.
Now, this is now that you're waiting for this big nor'easter to come in, you know, and you're going to be wishing that you were down in Florida during this.
Florida.
Thing. I'm sure as most people are thinking, but you know, it's got to be exciting to have a storm like that coming in as well. I mean, I've always liked storms. I think they make life a little bit interesting. So
I think storms are very cool as long as everybody's safe and you know all that
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. But am I sick of the snow? Yeah. You know, I was raised in Iowa and Minnesota, and
mm-hmm.
then out to California and here, and you know, I've been kind of all over, but not to Florida. Florida's cool. I actually just visited Florida for the first time last year and met Mickey Mouse and did the whole Disney thing. I played cards with Mickey Mouse.
Oh, you went to Orlando and everything. Okay, yeah.
But I can't believe I really was mostly raised in Iowa, so, you know, an alligator to me is like, oh, yeah, nah, it's not real. They're huge.
Right. Yeah, they are.
Like, right there. Like, oh, my God, no, they're there. So that was pretty bizarre. But that I came back thinking that would be the best joke ever to play on somebody here.
Mm-hmm.
Like I went to this baseball field, and there was a pond right there, and I'm like, that needs an alligator in the middle of it so badly. Just freak people out. No, but anyway.
Yeah, you want to stay out of the pond water because it could be very likely that there could be either a python or an alligator, you know, in there, you know, so you just don't want to take the chance. So
not swim. Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. So tell me, what are you guys going to do for this next year? And I know this is Best Ever You and self-help and, you know, all that good stuff that goes with being a Hay House author. I'm really curious. Through all this, you seem to me like a guy that does not put a barrier up or, you know, a boundary up as far as what you can or can't do. You seem like you're an endless possibility kind of person. So that being said, is that true, and what do you got planned?
Well, I just look at myself as, you know, somebody that always tries to push forward. There's more to be done, and there's more to be learned and everything, and every day is a lesson that's in its own. But what we plan on doing is playing a lot of tour dates this year, in which our booking agent is booking us up really good right now and making sure that happens. But we just released, as of January 7th, we released our new EP, which is called Louder. And it's a 5-song EP with 4 new songs and also a version of a live version of Turn Up the Radio. And
nice.
So, so that came out really well. And we're going to be touring, playing some of the new songs and, you know, just refining the set as we go along and doing more and more shows. I love playing live, and we all do. That's one thing that when we have time off, all of us hate it. We just hate it. It's just like, we've got to get back on the road. We miss each other, you know, and we just want to get back out there and just do it as soon as possible. And so the more tour dates that we have, then the better. And we plan on going over to Europe again. We just went over there last year, or actually 2014, and played for the first time. Autograph had never done Europe before. And I had known from doing Europe, doing my clinics, that we had a good following over there, because after my clinics, there was like 2 or 3 hours of, you know, signing records and different memorabilia and stuff. So I knew that we had a good following over there. And sure enough, when we went over there, it was just a sold out crowd for Firefest, and it just went over immensely well. And so we definitely want to go back over there, but, you know, do a lot of shows here as well in the States.
How have things changed from the 80s to, you know, 2016? Is it profoundly different, slightly different? You know, What's different with touring?
You know, when you get back with these bands that were popular during the 80s, not very many people look that much different. They still are kind of wearing the same stuff. The hairstyle's a little bit different, you know, but they everybody still kind of has the same attitude, like, hey, let's go out there and rock and have a good time with the fans and everything. So it's really cool. So it's really cool seeing a lot of the bands from the 80s that I knew back then and seeing them out on tour again, like the guys from Quiet Riot and Winger, and just the list goes on and on, just everybody, you know. So that's a lot of fun seeing them again. Okay, the fans are older.
We've all got to be older.
Yeah. You know, but it's cool seeing them because, you know, they're people that you played for before and a lot of people that we had met and everything and befriended back then in the 80s. And now they come up to see you and their kids are growing and they want to go out there and they want to live that whole thing again, you know, or they miss that whole 80s thing when they're out partying and going seeing bands all the time. And so it's really cool to connect with those people again. I mean, it's just a great time. You know, it makes it all worthwhile, you know, when you get out there and you see a bunch of these fans that were there for you back in the 80s. It just really makes it worthwhile.
You know, it's interesting, too. As I was thinking, I love to market and brand. I told you that. You know, it's just a thing I love to do. And I was trying to think of, wonder what they could do that would reach, like, every 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old, like my kids, some of, you know, my younger kids,
uh-huh,
age group. Is the music that you're playing geared toward the fans that were in the 80s that are all grown up? Is it geared toward everybody? And I guess, are you ever going to do something like, yeah, let's go on Nick Jr. and sing Turn Up the Radio so the, you know, the 12-year-olds know it now too? What's your game plan?
Oh, we'd love
there?
To do something like that. Absolutely, we'd love to do something like that.
I would love to see that.
I think that the 80s music, even though it kind of fell out of, you know, fashion during the 90s and into the 2000s, but a lot of kids that like come in for lessons and a lot of their, you know, the parents that actually come in for lessons, they say that, you know, their kids just love it. When I have the kids and they want to learn some of the old 80s stuff, because a lot of the rock out there now, it's almost like pseudo rock. It's not real, or a lot of it's just a little bit too heavy for them. Whereas the 80s stuff, that was like sing along, you know, get up and dance, you know, and have a good time. It was all about having a great time. You know, there wasn't too many depressing songs back in the 80s. You know, that was for the 90s. That was what I call, you know, heroin rock, really. Basically, it was, you know, really depressed rock and roll for the most part. But they want to hear stuff that gets them going. That's just like really good, having a good time, rock and roll stuff. And they really favor that type of music a lot. And so, you know, our new songs are very similar. They're a little bit different, a little bit more modern. But it still caters to that same type of audience that just loves to hear good songs, good melodies, good hook lines, and some good raw guitar in it. Some big drums and bass and everything, all the ingredients that make up a good song. So, you know, I think that they're kind of come around, like they really enjoy that type of music, that style, because it really uplifts you. And so,
yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
Yes.
Yeah. I was trying to think of, like, you know, you guys, you know, on the Nick Awards getting slimed or something
yeah,
super, you know. I think that'd be the coolest thing. And one of my kids said. They're like, you know, they need to, like, go on to, like, Nick and be at the Kids' Choice Awards and get slimed and turn up the radio and have everybody, you know, dancing and all stuff. And that was his idea. So I thought that was a good idea. And he had never heard the song before, and I played it for him, and I said, what do you think? He's going to come on the radio show and be on all stuff. And so there's a lot of 14-year-olds right now listening from Falmouth Middle School. So thank you all for listening. And they've been watching your videos and doing everything, getting just, you know, totally acquainted with who you are and your music and all that stuff. So I think that's pretty cool when you're that timeless that you can reach an audience like that and they love you. I think that's so.
Yeah, I do. I have to agree with that. I think it's very cool too. I'm really glad that the younger people like it as well because, you know, why not? They can enjoy it. They can enjoy it too. I mean, there's more than Justin Bieber and Katy Perry. You know, that's
yeah,
available out there
to
them. You know, even though they're great in their own right and they cater to that age group and everything, but if they want to hear some rock and roll with some good fun lyrics and everything that they can relate to, then you know the 80s stuff really does. Yeah, hold that tradition.
Yeah, and then he wanted to put you between two ferns. Like, oh no, we're gonna put them. Okay, the whole band's going between two ferns, and you get to be interviewed. I can't remember the guy's name, but that's pretty funny. Because everybody does that show. I'm like, all right.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I can't remember.
God.
Between two ferns is what it's called. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Boy. They've got all these ideas for you, and I'm like, all right, well, whatever. I'll pass them along live on the air, and we'll see what he thinks. Tell me about being. Do you have to go or anything? I know I'm a little bit. Am I going over time, or am I okay? Or I know we're kind of.
No, you're fine.
Good.
You're
got a few
fine.
More minutes.
No.
Okay, a few more minutes.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What's it like to be in like Guitar Magazine, and you know, all these. You've been honored quite a bit with your work. What's the most prestigious honor that you've had or been awarded or whatever the words are for that? But I would think being in Guitar World would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it was Guitar World that voted. The subscribers voted me or the song, the solo in Turn Up the Radio. Best solo of the year, and that really made me feel good. And then the Guitar Player magazine. They had me in their spotlight column for new talent. And you know, I won the New York Music Expo, Guitar Player of the Year and got to be on stage with, Johnny Winter, Les Paul, Larry Coryell, just these phenomenal jazz and rock players and blues players and stuff. And I'm up there just going, wow, this is... This is overwhelming, that's for sure. This is I wasn't quite expecting this, but it's really, really nice to be respected by your peers. That's something that I never quite expected, even though that's what I was trying to probably achieve more than anything, you know, just being a good guitar player, to just like have one of your peers just know who you are and compliment you. That's just like a huge thing. And then when you have, you know, like the subscribers of magazines and, you know, like guitar magazines and everything. And you know, people that hear your stuff on the radio and all these people that like, you know, Monday, all these guitar players are just hordes of guitar players that wish me a happy birthday and said I was a big influence. And that just made me really feel good. It really made me feel like I'd really accomplished something. And you know, because, you know, you're always thinking about the future. You don't think that much about what you've done, what you've already done. You know, I'm not my rocking chair motif yet. That's what I call when you're at the end of your life and you're looking back at everything. But
you're not allowed to ever go there, really. No,
no.
You will not be doing that ever. No.
And so it was just nice to hear. It's very refreshing to hear that, you know, that people really appreciate what I've done. And you know, I appreciate them, you know, letting me know that. You know, it's very nice to hear. So,
Well, and it was your birthday. It was your birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday again. And
thank you.
Okay, here's the best ever you part, guys. The small, tiny sliver of everything best ever you at the very end of the show here. I have to ask this now. What do you do? You look great. You know, do you run? Do you exercise? What do you, you know, it looks like you eat healthy. What do you do to stay your best, because
things are going to be
busy.
One of the big things is I try to avoid stress, and that's one of the big things. I try to do that by, one of the big things is getting a lot of sleep. I try to sleep, you know, a good solid 8 hours, sometimes 10, because I feel like I'm rejuvenated when I do that, and I feel so much energy when I get lots of good sleep. And I think that's what a lot of people kind of put on the back burner, you know, a lot of times it's because of their schedule, but if they take time to just like take time, even like a couple times a day, just to do like a 15-minute meditation and just take a time out, that's huge to be able to do that, just to like, you know, clear your mind and just do that. And exercise is a good thing. I don't go overboard with it. I love going hiking. I love swimming. I love, and I do weights here at home. I just have weights at home, but I do twice a day I do that. And, you know, with push-ups and sit-ups and all that kind of stuff. And then I eat healthy for the most part. When I'm on the road, it's not always that healthy. But, because you're
that's
on a limited
hard,
schedule,
it?
You know. And yeah, well, yeah. Plus, you don't have that many options a lot of times because you get done playing late and everything. And so, you know, and if the catering's not still there at the venue that you're playing, then you're kind of left out on your own.
That's actually terrifying for me when I travel with food allergies, because I have some of the most, I developed allergies after my second pregnancy, and they're life-threatening, and eating out is, I'm the worst dinner date ever. It's like, I've got to call the chef ahead of time and make sure nothing touches and all this stuff. It's just great. It's so stupid.
Oh, sure.
But
absolutely.
But it's critical to be able to cook and stuff like that. But I know, what was I going to, the other thing I was going to ask you about, sleep. Critical. I couldn't agree with you more. And stress levels and keeping, you know, everything in check. How are you going to do that with a busy tour schedule? How are you going to do all that with getting sleep and exercise and everything? Or do you find the balance when you're on the road?
Well, exercise is one thing is a tough thing to do when you're on the road. You know, sometimes you can get time to go down to the gym and stuff, but, you know, being a tour manager, either on the phone all the time, or I'm on the internet, you know, or on, you know, just, you know, texting people and, you know, seeing everything set up for the show and everything. So, you get quite busy with that. And sometimes you forget to eat, sometimes you don't get much of a chance to sleep. But for the most part, we're not out for any lengthy periods. I think the longest we've been out so far has been like 5 weeks. So there isn't any lengthy times. You know, you always have time to come back and get rested up and everything. And that's the way most people are doing it now anyway. It's kind of like the weekend warriors. We go out and play festivals. We go out and play casinos. We go out and play, you know, different of the clubs and halls and theaters and stuff like that. And we do it on the weekends, and then you fly home. And then I come back and I teach, you know, and then we'll fly off on the next weekend and do it. But sometimes you get a string of dates, you know, connected so that it's you're best to just stay out and either fly to each different date or just, you know, without coming home and just staying out there and getting them all done. But
that makes sense.
Yeah, it is definitely more difficult when you're, you know, when you're out touring to get the right amount of sleep, eat correctly, and get the exercise in that you need.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out how to do that with my book. When my book got released, I was like, I don't really understand how to just pick up and leave my four kids and go on tour with my book for a year.
Right.
And I didn't, actually. I was like, you know what? This is just going to have to sit, because there's no way I'm missing an entire year of everything going on with my kids when they're, you know, 13,
sure.
15, 17,
absolutely.
And 19. It just was not happening. So it's been interesting to learn how to do everything within a range, or everything from
mm-hmm.
home for periods of time and stuff like that. So interesting, but again, I don't have to play on stage like you do. But
yeah,
every once in a while, you got to show up
and
sign some books and do some things to interact with people. Get out of the house, put some heels on, and get the hair done and go.
Yep.
But before we go, thanks for playing along with my best ever you segment. before we go, I want to make sure that I give people your website. It's autographband.com. And
mm-hmm.
people can check that website for your tour dates, right? Autographband.
Yes, they can.
.com.
Yeah.
And
then there's still a bunch
being
added. There might still be, like, there's a lot booked, but we don't put them on the website until I have the contract and the contract is signed. So we're booked for a lot more dates than what might show up on there. But when everything's signed, that's when we post it. You know, so people know that yeah.
And then you guys look like you're pretty active on Twitter, which is at
yes.
Autograph Band, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
At Autograph Stand. And then your Facebook page. And I'll put links out. I put some links out with the show to everybody who's listening, but I will make sure and put the links out so you can reach these guys in social media. And I guess I'm going to let you go here because I've kept you, I think, over an hour. Sorry.
That's fine. No problem.
No, but I'm so much fun to be able to talk to you. What a gift you have. And I just wish you the best of luck and wish your band the best of luck with everything that you guys have going on. It's been wonderful to get to know you better, and I thank you for giving us an hour plus of your time to get to know you. It's cool to get to know you a little bit better.
Well, thank you for this opportunity, and it's been great speaking with you as well, and you know, I hope that everybody enjoyed the interview tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much, and to everybody listening, thank you also for your time. And you can share the show. You can go to the link, and on the left-hand side are all the social media links. We're on Pinterest, LinkedIn, Google+, Twitter, Reddit, I mean, everywhere. So you can share the show. And I would encourage you, everything's on iTunes also, right?
Yes, everything's on iTunes. Yep. And yeah, so you can find it all there. Yeah, it's all downloadable as well.
Okay, so yeah, and go to Autograph Band. I think everything is there. There's merchandise. You can buy their CD. You can go to iTunes. You can do just about anything. So pretty awesome website. I love that website. And great pictures of you guys too. I love all the pictures. Really a lot of fun to look at all the things that they've got going on, and quite a photogenic bunch. And so thank you so much again for being with us. Thank you to everybody. And I don't have any. Show scheduled for a little bit here because we're doing a lot of things with baseball, but I'll certainly let everybody know in social media when we have some shows scheduled again. I've got some guests that are going to come on, and I think maybe we'll pull Simon from Autograph on for another show.
You'd be glad to do it.
He
yeah,
wants to come
to
on
it,
for an hour. Yeah, I think that'd be so much fun to get to keep getting to know you guys. It's cool. So, all right, thank you again, Steve, very much for being with us, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Appreciate it, and I hope you guys have a wonderful night, and thank you. Anything else you want to say? Did I miss anything?
No, just come and see us at the shows, everybody. We'd love to see you there. Come up and say hi afterwards. We always take the time to go out and meet everybody after the show as well. So
awesome.
Enjoy the nor'easter. just stay out of trouble. Try to remain
exactly.
safe, that's all.
Yeah. Everybody stay safe out there. All right, thank you again, everybody, for listening. Take care and have a wonderful night, and please visit us also at besteveryou.com. We appreciate all you do to help us reach new people every day, change lives, everything that Best Ever You does. My goal is to just keep touching lives, changing lives, connecting people. That's my thing. I love to do more than anything is just connect the dots with people and make sure people are networked. And if there's something you need out there, make sure you ask, because one thing I love about our network is somebody always knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And so if you're dreaming about something, thinking about something you want to do, write a book, write a song, write a this, write a that, do something, anything that you're dreaming about, make sure you always put your dreams out there. So people know what you're thinking, because you'd be amazed at what people do to show up to help you achieve your dreams. It's so cool. So that's my profound thought for the night. I don't know if that was so profound, but I just noticed that every time you type something into the Best Ever You Network or on your Facebook page, it says, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. I'm thinking about writing a poem or a song or I want to go here on this trip. And once you write it out there, there's so many different comments that people give to help you achieve. And so I just want to throw that out there as a thought. And thank you again, everybody, for listening and sharing the Best Ever You show. And much success to the band Autograph. And thank you so much to Steve Lynch again for coming on for an hour plus. How cool was he? Autographband.com. I hope you guys follow them, support them, share all of their stuff, retweet them, all that good stuff that makes people fulfill their dreams. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great night. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.